today, you're tuned to TNRA, the channel of truth, beaming out to you on this 10th day of July 2013. It's a great pleasure to be speaking to you today, and we do have an interesting show lined up, ladies and gentlemen. In the second hour, I have a guest who's been on the show before. His name's Leon Pittard, and he has his own show, Fair Dinkum Radio, which you can find on the internet, and he does some really amazing interviews, and he's Australian and very down-to-earth, very true blue Aussie, doing a cutting-edge info warrior job there from rural New South Wales. And we're going to be going through a lot of stuff when he comes on. It's kind of a tour de force with Leon, and so many of the themes that he talks about are the same as what you'll hear on this show. We're going to have a lot to talk about. It's going to be very interesting. So do stay tuned for that. Now, in the first hour, I've got some other news to run through with you, some of it being international news, and I've got more on the Edward Snowden story, a couple of clips I want to play for you, illustrating the gross violation of international law, which I think is something I really want to emphasise, and I want us to reflect on it in relation to the downing of the Bolivian presidential jet, which was forced to land in Europe simply on the belief that Edward Snowden was on board. I mean, this is an incredibly significant diplomatic incident, which I think we'll see the repercussions of for a long time to come. Of course, the media, in its toadying way, has downplayed it, as if to say it's not such a big deal. It's a really big deal, folks. You know, it's a violation of diplomatic immunity. It's also a violation of international law. To force a plane to land, which has already filed flight plans, I mean, would be an extreme action, even if it were not the diplomatic plane carrying the president of a sovereign nation. But this is what they did. And I think we've got to keep talking about it. We have to really raise a big stink about this. We have to continue to talk about it, tell our friends about it, because it also illustrates the degree to which the tyranny has reached globally, not just in the United States, not just in Australia. We're talking about collaboration of multiple European states in this illegal, outrageous act of state terrorism, as the Bolivian president described it. So I've got a clip I'm going to play to you which outlines some aspects of that. I've also got another story to share with you, which is one from Australia, but also involves an American component, which is really an incredibly dark, incredibly disturbing story about pedophilia and child trafficking, which it really beggars belief. I find it utterly incredible. The level of psychopathy involved in the individuals concerned, the way in which the whole affair went on right under the nose of the police and the mainstream media, which is undeniable, because in this case we have a gay couple who allegedly adopted a child, but in fact bought a child, and they were actually interviewed in an ABC radio puff piece on the joys of gay marriage and how wonderful it is that in Australia we have gay marriage, and portrayed this couple as if they were some wonderful, you know, example to hold up to the world. And in the interview, the couple talks about how they were actually screened by the police prior to the adoption. And yet it turns out years later that they were engaged in the most heinous crimes imaginable. I mean, the worst things you can possibly imagine. It really is very, very disturbing, ladies and gentlemen, very disturbing. And, you know, I just think we should reflect on it. We need to understand. We need to think about what's happened in our society. And we need to think about the editorial integrity of the ABC, how it is that they could have done this story with so little investigation, because it turned out that the child was not actually a surrogate, as the couple had described. in the interview, the couple described the child as actually being the result of a surrogacy that was paid for and managed by them. In fact, the child was simply bought with, I think, 8,000 euros from a lady in Russia who forged the birth certificate. That's how it was done. Anyway, we'll be getting on to that later in the hour, but I'm going to play to you now an audio clip about the US violation of international law. And this is from Mark Weisbrot. And the interview is from the Real News Network. Mark Weisbrot is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. And here he's just responding to a question from the interviewer.
So, Mark, my first question is, just to be clear, we're hearing a lot of things from the mainstream press, specifically that countries have denied Snowden asylum, specifically China, Russia, Venezuela, Ecuador. Can you clarify for our audience if these countries actually have a denied Snowden asylum?
No, only a few countries have actually denied him asylum. The majority have said either they're considering it or they would consider it if he were on their territory. So that's what Ecuador said. For example, if he gets to an Ecuadorian embassy or to Ecuador itself, then they would consider an application for asylum, and they would almost certainly grant it. Bolivia and Venezuela are definitely leaning towards it. And I think they would grant him asylum too, depending on circumstances. For example, they might want him to be in an embassy too, or they may not. And so he has places to go. I think the main problem right now is the United States is illegally preventing him from traveling.
Okay, can you elaborate a little bit more? What are they doing specifically?
Well, you saw what happened on Tuesday. He wasn't even on this plane. It was the presidential plane of Bolivia with the president on it. And in spite of the fact that this caused a major controversy between and conflict between the European countries and Latin America, and of course the U.S. and Latin America, France, Spain, and Portugal, and possibly other countries, grounded his plane. They forced him to turn back and go to Austria. They wouldn't let him pass French or Spanish or Portuguese airspace. So this was a very serious offense. I mean, you know, obviously it's not as bad as killing somebody or something like that, but in the diplomatic world, these conventions are rarely, rarely violated. It was like last year when the UK threatened to invade the Ecuadorian embassy. That was something that hadn't been done for 50 or 100 years. I mean, you know, even the Nazis, you know, respected embassies when people were sheltered there in most cases, you know. So this is something that's just not done. And the same is true about this event. This is something that just isn't done. A president's plane, which has a diplomatic immunity, is not turned away, especially on the mere suspicion, which turned out to be false, that somebody the United States was looking for was on the plane. And this isn't Osama bin Laden on the plane either. This is somebody who's just wanted for, well, for a crime that probably half the world doesn't even consider a crime.
So from your perspective, do you believe that Bolivia and other South American countries will come forward and help Snowden in any way?
Yes, they have come forward, and I think they will. They are willing to give him asylum. Again, the logistical problem right now is the United States has allies that are willing to, as we saw yesterday, violate international law and diplomatic immunity and the Vienna Conventions. And again, these are things that are almost never violated, and they're willing to do that on behalf of the United States. This, by the way, I think shows how important this is. You know, at first, the Obama administration threatened Russia and threatened China, and they looked very foolish because China and Russia both, you know, Hong Kong just ignored their request for extradition. And the Russians, you know, kind of laughed at the threat and offered Snowden asylum. And, you know, he turns out he didn't take it because he didn't want the conditions attached. Putin said he had to stop, I think he said it in terms of stop harming the United States. So he doesn't want restrictions on what, on his speech or what he publishes. But so, you know, that then Obama backed off and he said, well, you know, this is just a law enforcement matter. It's very simple. We're not going to scramble any jets to get a 29-year-old hacker. We're not talking to any heads of state. But this turned out to be really false because they are trying very desperately to get this guy. And they're willing, you know, this was the fact that they were willing to, and, you know, put the presidential plane of Bolivia in danger as well and cause this diplomatic row. And Spain, of course, you know, France was quite embarrassed about it. Spain has commercial relations, the most commercial relations of anyone in Europe with Latin America, and doesn't want to injure their relations. So this clearly, the United States government made it very clear to these countries that this was a top priority for them. I mean, a huge priority. And that's what it is to them. It's become a kind of a test of their power in the world. Can they tell other countries what to do? Can they decide what international law is? Can they violate international law in pursuit of this person who they want to capture for political reasons? That was what it's become, and that's why I think it's so important to them.
I'll just leave it there. I think that point is extremely important to understand that this has become a platform for America to prove its power, just as the war on terror and the hunt for Osama bin Laden. But this is now really a war against an individual, a citizen who certainly isn't engaged in terrorism, who is actually doing something in the public interest. This is the sort of scenario that we have been warning about for a long time, that the apparatus of state tyranny would eventually be turned on to our own citizens, people who simply are standing up for transparency and truth are now going to be the target. And, of course, we see that with Bradley Manning. It provides a huge focus now of the energy of the American kind of, rhetoric in terms of like demonizing enemies. These people who are actually the ones who are standing up for truth, the ones who are standing up for justice, are being portrayed as enemies. It's very important to recognize that. And it's very important to also recognize that the exposing of the secret spying programs is also the exposing of things that have been kept secret. And this this juxtaposition, this strange contradiction between the government on the one hand demanding more and more access to all of our personal life so we are unable to keep secrets, while at the same time the government's secrecy only increases. I think both sides of that need to be examined when we look at this issue. We're just going to break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia. www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix. To the pink.
Hi, welcome back. You with Truth News Radio. We can be found on the World Wide Web at www.truthnews.com.au, and we look forward to hearing from you. If you'd like to drop by, drop us a line, send me an email. We certainly have contact options there on the website that you can use. And if you've got any interesting tips for stories, if you'd like to come on the show, I do encourage you. And if you'd like to help in any way, if you'd like to be a volunteer, there are a number of urgent and very, very pressing things that I would like some help with. But most of the things I require help with do require a level of technical expertise. If you find computers a bit challenging, if you're one of those people who just, you know, doesn't really understand technical things, probably not. I'd say, you know, let's not try and do something we can't do. But if you do, there's a lot of things I actually would really love some assistance with. Some of it is in terms of managing this website. Some of it is in terms of managing a live show. My show previously was a live show, but it now is only pre-recorded for the simple reason that we cannot source a producer. The producer of the show provides a very important function. What they do is they'll use some software that's actually installed on a computer, which can be anywhere. It doesn't have to be in Austin, where the radio show is broadcast from. It doesn't have to be in Australia, where I am. It can be anywhere in the world. The third-party producer simply logs in with an internet connection and is able to produce the show, which means taking calls. It means basically filtering calls and taking the show in and out of the live segments. Fairly straightforward, some technical things there that need to be understood, but easily learned if you have some basic technical competence. So if you're interested, do get back to me on that, because we really do need that. I would love to once again resume doing live shows. Now, before the break there, I was talking about this dichotomy between secrecy on the one hand, secrecy of the government, and then the denial of privacy of the individual. And I think we need to look at those two things together, those two trends together. I think too often when people look at these issues, they only look at one narrow aspect of it. And when you look at one narrow aspect of it, you can say, well, yes, the loss of privacy that we've experienced these days is bad. But then you can say, well, maybe that's just a manifestation of a changing society and a changing technological landscape. It's simply a lot easier to eavesdrop on people. With all the social media out there, we shouldn't expect to have privacy. And that is actually something that I do believe. I believe that if you put your stuff on the internet, on the World Wide Web, by definition, it's not private, right? But where it becomes complex is when you use a tool like Facebook or Gmail, which purports to give you privacy or gives you a degree of privacy, but you only vaguely understand it to start off with. You don't really know how it works in the back end of the system. You probably don't even fully understand the settings that they've given you to regulate your level of privacy. And you probably don't know whether you want to share everything or whether you don't want to share everything. You probably haven't really a clear idea in your mind about where that dividing line should be. For example, and also, you don't have a clear understanding of what privacy really means. Because in the context of, for example, Gmail, Google has been quite open about this for many years, and it's quite clear that this is certainly an invasion of your privacy, that when you type an email, there is a bot, there is a artificial intelligence within Gmail that reads what you've written and then will serve you advertising based on the profile it's building of you by all the emails you send. Now, you could argue, well, that's not really invading your privacy. I disagree. But you could argue it. You could say, well, it's just a background system that's all just purely computer driven, and it's simply serving you up material related to what you've typed. But the point is that the system was set up to harvest your information. And, of course, that harvesting of your information can go in a variety of different directions. And, of course, it's an exploitation of your activities, in the sense that it's basically, you know, you're living your life, you're having private conversations with people. It's feeding off that to basically be able to make money out of you. So it's commercial exploitation, and I'm totally against it. I don't use Gmail. I mean, once I discovered that Gmail does that, I decided never to use Gmail. And I do encourage you all out there to think about that and maybe make the same decision. Now, Facebook, on the other hand, I do use. I'm aware of the fact that there is no privacy there. I don't put the same sort of sensitive material into, for example, a Facebook message that I would put into an email. I don't expect much privacy on Facebook. And there's a really important point to note here further is that with Facebook and Gmail and Skype, we have to understand that these are free products. We don't pay a cent for them. The giant corporations have given us these, and we need to understand that whenever someone gives you something for free, it's generally not really free. There is generally some price to be paid. You are actually paying for it in some manner. They're getting some, to put it another way around, they are getting some benefit out of it, right? And, you know, I think we need to be a little bit more mature, a little bit wiser about understanding that nothing in this world is truly free. Anything that's complex, anything that's difficult, takes time and effort to do, and you don't put time and effort into something for no reward. So these giant corporations that give you these wonderful toys to play with are not just doing it for fun, folks. They're doing it because they get a reward. Now, part of that is through advertising. Part of it is through exploiting your privacy through your private communications for the sake of advertising. But part of it also is exploiting you for the powers that be, for the encroaching fascist New World Order, which is kind of like an overgrowth on the top of all of that, kind of like a cancerous overgrowth, which is now sucking everything into itself. So you're paying a price. You're paying a very, very, very stiff price too. My suggestion is we start, those of us who are awake, that we start to move away from these monolithic tools that are given to us for free, that are simply honey traps to enslave us and exploit us. I mean, I've done so with my own site, truthnews.com.au, totally independent. I manage it myself. It runs on a server. I have trouble getting people to come and visit the site. People tend to visit the Facebook page where I post my articles. People don't tend to leave comments. People are addicted to Facebook because it's convenient, and that's, I guess, where all your friends are, and it just seems very easy to go with the flow, go with the crowd. But again, folks, we've got to get beyond this mentality of going with the crowd. Again, I would put it to you that itself is also part of a tyrannical state, part of an enslaved condition. It's a psychological condition that we need to grow out of following the crowd, of basically letting peer pressure determine our decisions. Now, I'm going to talk a little more about this when we come back from the break. I just want to go over the secrecy question again. And then we're going to move on with another very, very sad story indeed. Do stay with us.
Man to man is so unjust. children. Yeah, I don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend. And your best friend, your worst enemy.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Pleasure to be talking to you today, and I dare say an honor to be able to reach out and basically reflect on what's going on and to share with you some of the things that I've been picking up. I get a lot of stuff arriving to me through emails, a lot of stuff on Twitter feeds, etc. And just talking here about this question about secrecy, as I was saying before, we need to understand that we have in a way set ourselves up for this problem by going along with these monolithic products given to us with a sting in the tail that totally violate our privacy. Having said that, we know that that's a problem, we know it's an issue, we need to steer away from it. But now let's look at this odd dichotomy that we see between government demanding more and more access to our private communications, but government at the same time demanding total secrecy of its own activities, including those activities that involve spying on us. In other words, they look into our secrets, they pry into every nook and cranny of our life. We are not privy to what they're doing. And someone like Snowden, who simply in the public interest exposes the degree to which your privacy is being violated, he is treated as if he is Osama bin Laden. He is treated as the world's most wanted. Because of him, presidential aircraft are forced down and searched. That's the state. That's the sad state of Western European democracy. Again, a travesty of that term. But I believe it's part of a quickening, an awakening also, because many people have become aware that we have a problem. Many more people are becoming aware with each of these successive scandals that breaks through the media and breaks through because of a general awakening and because of the power of the individual. There is a momentum created, and I think we're going to start seeing huge changes very soon. I think we're in the middle of those changes. We just can't see it yet. Now, I'd like to turn to the story I mentioned earlier. Very, very sad, very disturbing tale about the gay couple in Australia, one American, one Australian, who adopted a child for the purpose of sex slavery and just most horrifically abused this child. The child was sent around the world to basically be abused by men, was filmed doing various activities, and eventually the men were caught. But before they were caught, long before they were caught, they had already been screened by the police. According to an interview which was conducted by ABC Radio, and this is an incredible aspect to the story, because the couple were interviewed years ago, long before the arrest. The couple were interviewed as part of an ABC puff piece on the joys of gay marriage, and they were talking about how wonderful it is, and they were basically celebrating this couple. And subsequently, the story about this couple went around the world and was repeated on various gay activist sites, and you can still find it there, and you can see the photo of the couple with the little boy. It turned out that the child was not a surrogate. The interview claims that the man was actually the biological father, that the man in the interview by the name of Mark had actually paid a Russian surrogate to have the child. None of that was true. The birth certificates were forged, and the child was being used for acts of, you know, sexual perversion, and was being shared around with a network of men. I'm going to play to you some of this original ABC radio interview, and then I'm going to play to you another interview about the story which popped up on television just in the last week. It's a real shocking story, but I think, you know, it illustrates something about the degree of narcissism or psychopathy in our society, that this sort of thing can go on under the noses of the police, under the noses of the media, and even be elevated by the media into some wonderful thing, when in fact it's the most heinous, obnoxious, perverted, evil, satanic thing you can imagine taking place. So first, we'll just kick off with the interview, which was broadcast on ABC, a local radio. I'm not quite sure of the exact date, but it is several years ago.
Putting gender on the agenda. ABC Far North.
Drake, where are your chickens?
Well, I cannot get them, sorry.
Can I get them?
No.
Do you want me to give you a hand?
Yes.
Have you fed them this morning?
No.
You haven't? They'd probably be very hungry, I think. Oh, here's one.
One's harder to get.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you know what this chicken's name is, Drake?
No. I haven't figured out the name.
I don't think he's named him yet.
I'm going to call them, Chick Fasty.
I guess he is pretty fast.
Hi, my name's Pete, and this is Mark and our son, Drake. We are gay dads.
And you had Drake through surrogacy. Explain to me how that all started out.
We decided that we would have a child, that it was time for us to have a family. We wanted to experience the joys of fatherhood, and we started our surrogacy over in the United States, I think back in 2002.
And is that because you're from the States, Mark?
We were living and working there at the time. Surrogacy rules and laws were much easier in the United States, and there were plenty of women willing to go through the process.
You gave that a go and it didn't work. Why was that?
We'd made multiple attempts. The women just didn't get pregnant.
What about the idea of surrogacy? It's not something that everybody would be comfortable with.
Right, but because we're a gay couple, we really didn't have any other option. We knew that there were certainly plenty of women willing to do it, so if it was okay with them, then I guess it was fine with us.
It's something that most people would never investigate, trying to find somebody to have a baby for them. How did you go about doing that?
Well, we do what a lot of people do these days and go to the internet. We found various people on the internet that we spoke with, and, you know, we had considered an agency. They would do all the matching for us, but once again, the prices were rather high. So we decided on our own to interview and find that match for us.
What was that like, trying to find somebody to have a baby with? What sorts of things did you think about?
I guess there's a number of things that run through your mind. Primarily, you know, are they genuine in what they want to do? We have heard about a lot of scams and problems with certain people who represent themselves as so-called surrogate mothers who are really out there just to make money. But, the health of the woman as well, and trying to make sure that she truly understands the nature of the commitment, I think were very important to us.
What about you, Mark? What were you thinking about when you went to meet different prospective mothers for your child?
First thing that came to mind was whether it may be some sort of scam. Like Peter said, whether she was just interested in the money, if she said she was pregnant but really wasn't pregnant, or if she was pregnant and at the very end of it that she wouldn't give up her baby.
And that must be a big consideration, and I suppose one that you can't know in advance.
You cannot know.
In the end, you didn't have your child in the States. What happened then?
It didn't work in the States. We gave it up for a little while. Then Peter found that we could do a surrogacy in Russia. It was going to be a lot more difficult because of the language, but the costs were so much more less. That's both for the surrogate and for the procedure, that it was hard to refuse.
You went to live in Russia?
Yes, I did. You know, after going back and forth quite often, you know, I gave up my career and my job and went to Russia to oversee the process. Communication obviously was very difficult. Mark and I both had a private tutor to teach us Russian.
Now, I'll just leave it there. I just wanted to play a bit of that so you can see how nominally normal these two guys sound. And how, because later on, when we come back from the break, you'll find out how completely evil, twisted and sick they in fact were. One of them has now been sentenced to 40 years in prison in the US. Apparently, one of them performed sexual acts on the two-year-old at the time. We're going to break. Hi, welcome back. You with Truth News Radio. We're talking here today about a very, very disturbing story about child pornography and pedophilia. But we're talking here about a deception that was wrought upon the mainstream media and right under the noses of the police. And I played you there before the break the ABC Radio puff piece that was basically celebrating this gay couple as if they were poster children for what the society of the future will be when we fully accept gay marriage and we fully accept gender differences, etc., in our society. This is what we continually hear on the ABC. It's a major theme of the kind of manipulation of your thinking and the manipulation of your consciousness. And it's not very often we see such an incredible unfolding, stark contrast to that with the actual couple involved in this radio piece being demonstrated to be just unimaginably evil. So let me read to you here now an article from the ABC News from June the 30th, 2013. An Australian man has been sentenced to 40 years in prison in the United States for trafficking his adopted son to a global pedophile network. The 42-year-old man was arrested in California last year and was found to be part of a global pedophile ring. Police say the man and his partner travelled the world with the child, allowing at least 8 men in several different countries, including Australia, the US, Germany and France, to molest the boy when he was aged between just 2 and 6 years old. That's right, folks, you heard it. The first molestation occurred at the age of 2, and apparently that was documented. They actually videoed it. The child abuse was so horrific, the judge refused to put the case to a jury. The man was handed the maximum sentence of 40 years imprisonment on Saturday after he pleaded guilty to charges of possessing child pornography and sexual exploitation of a minor. The boy's other legal guardian is awaiting sentencing, while 2 other American men have also been charged. Police say the boy, now 8, had been living with the men in Cairns for several years, when in 2011 New Zealand authorities discovered that the boy had been used in child pornography. Now I'm going to play to you a clip here from a recent news broadcast on ABC television here in Australia, where the reporter who was involved in that story actually explained what happened from her point of view. Here we go.
It's a case that defies belief and goes against every principle of parenthood. An Australian man and his partner purchased a baby boy in Russia in 2005, presenting themselves as a devoted pair of gay fathers. In reality, behind closed doors, they were sexually abusing the boy and allowing others to do the same from when he was less than 2 years old. On the weekend, Australian citizen Mark Newton was sentenced in the US to 40 years in prison. His partner, Peter Trong, is awaiting his sentence. Caro Meldrum-Hanna has this report and a warning. This story contains disturbing and explicit sexual references.
Testing, this is Ginger from ABC Far North.
It was June 2010. ABC local radio presenter Ginger Gorman was setting out to meet an interesting family at Trinity Beach in Far North Queensland.
I was putting together a series of interviews on gender. This particular interview was with a couple who were gay dads and they had been on a long journey to have a child via surrogacy.
On all appearances, American man Mark Newton and his Australian partner, Peter Trong, were a proud couple, pictured here posing with their adopted son, who we will call Boy One. These are the sounds Ginger Gorman recorded that day, playing with the boy and his pet baby chickens in the backyard.
Have you fed them this morning?
No.
Oh, here's one.
One's harder to get.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you know what this chicken's name is?
No, I haven't figured out the name.
I don't think he's named him yet.
I'm going to call them, Chick Dasty.
I felt no sense that anything was wrong. For all intents and purposes, this appeared to be a loving family and a loving household. And I've gone over and over it in my brain and I just did not feel that anything was wrong.
Mark Newton and Peter Trong were masters of deception, starting with finding a surrogate mother abroad.
I gave up my career and my job and went to Russia to oversee the process. So we're very dedicated to making this work. Our budget was anything that we earned, anything that we had saved, and anything that we could borrow to make this happen.
And why was it your sperm that was used, not Pete's, Mark?
Flip of the coin, I think. We'd gone back and forth several times.
This was the first of many lies told by Newton and Trong, whose depraved secret life was uncovered a year and a half later, when in February 2012, the men were arrested in California, charged with producing and sharing child pornography and extreme acts of sexual exploitation.
I'm profoundly shocked and disgusted by what's happened since then. I'm revolted and I find myself quite despairing about the turn of events.
You know, the purchase of a child, to bring the child into your life for the explicit and sole purpose of exploiting him across a network of men is incredibly depraved and a very, very sad tale for that little boy.
The sad story of Boy One's life begins here in Russia. According to US court documents, in July 2005, his mother sold him to Newton and Trong for $8,000.
Now, I'll just leave it there. You can certainly follow this up on the website. We'll have all the links to those stories. Important point to note that in the wake of this scandal, the Russian government has changed its laws in regard to foreign adoption. I have an article here from ABC News, ABC Australia News, Wednesday, June the 19th, 2013. Russian MPs back adoption ban for foreign same-sex couples. Russian politicians have voted to restrict adoptions from countries that allow same-sex marriage. The proposal was passed unanimously in the Duma, lower house of parliament, and could ban even single people in more than a dozen countries from adopting Russian orphans. President Vladimir Putin has already vowed to sign the bill into law when it is approved by the upper house. Now, of course, this is being portrayed in the media as a kind of a homophobic stance of the Russian government. I think incredibly mischievously, considering the obvious context that these changes have occurred in. And this article itself makes no mention whatsoever of the scandal, which was at that point sort of really bubbling up to the surface. The ABC would certainly have had access to that information about this heinous crime that had been committed using the Russian adoption laws that at that point, you know, had allowed this to occur. I think the authorities in Russia were absolutely horrified by what occurred. I think they've moved to prevent such abuse ever happening again. And, you know, I have to say good on them. And, you know, if that comes across as me sounding like I'm homophobic, I don't want to come across that way. That's not my agenda here. But I think we've got a big problem. I mean, this really highlights a problem. And I'm sure the problem occurs with deviant heterosexual families too. But I don't know. I have to say I'm in a bit of a quandary about it. And I certainly don't want to come across as someone who would be saying that there is something fundamentally wrong with the gay thing, you know, sexual orientation, whatever. It's your shtick, right? But I have to share this story with my listeners, and we have to think about it. We have to think about what's really going on here. Why is there such incredible effort put into the media and into government policy in our countries to enshrine gayness as something, some wonderful thing? I don't personally get it. I think there's something wrong there, that this has been explained, this has been analyzed and interpreted as being part of a eugenics New World Order plan to basically bring about population reduction. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is an undermining of the natural biological functions of the family to create a situation where the state becomes your effective parent, and to undermine the natural tribal bond that occurs between families and each other. Now we've seen that undermined in many other ways, with the nanny state, with the welfare systems that actually encourage single parents, that actually deny rights to biological fathers and tend to lead to families being split up. Another side of it, we could say, is manifest in this what they call, you know, gender equalization, opening up the concept of marriage to being no longer a man and a woman, again breaking down the traditional, really primal essence of what the family is, of what and what an individual is, because the state believes you would be crafted by them, you would be reinvented by them. The old concepts are being slowly eroded, and the new concept of what an individual is being forged. We're going to break now. In the second hour, I'm going to have my guest Leon Pittard on. It's going to be a really interesting interview. We're going to cover a lot of important ground. Do stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.